It's I've never been to Parramatta before, so this is a great opportunity to come. So this talk has to do with whole algebras, but to the extent it has to do with whole algebras, it's sort of a failure at the moment. But I'll explain why. But what I'm going to explain is joint work with two sets of people in two dimensions. The collaborators are András Gyenge and Adam Gyenge and András Németi. So this is work that goes back a couple of years. And then also with Ben Davison, speaker here, and Jared Ongaro.
Sorry, can you press the chalk more?
Yes, sorry. Yeah, I can see the problem now. I complained before about that. Okay, so I just you can find the papers on the archive. The story I'm going to explain has a very, very strong combinatorial flavor, but it's motivated by geometry. And so the starting point is, so I guess the introduction. Pressing it as hard as I can. The starting point is going to be some finite group. So gamma is a finite group acting on just CD, but just right away, of course, going to be in some kind of sensible dimensions. So gamma is finite. It's just a finite matrix group. And I want to study the equivariant geometry and some partition functions that are very naturally arise from the equivariant geometry. In this generality, one can, so if I take a representation of this finite group, then I can associate to this representation something I'm going to denote the Rho Hilbert scheme of CD, which is the, as a set at least, is a set of ideals in the coordinate ring such that I is gamma invariant. And the quotient is isomorphic as a gamma representation to rho. Because ideal is invariant, the quotient has an action, and I just want that action to be rho. If I put all of these together, then that's actually the fixed point set, the gamma fixed point set of the natural action of gamma on all the Hilbert schemes of points of CD. So of course, in general, this is not a nice space. In some special cases, it's much nicer. So I'll discuss this in detail a bit later. But just with that, so just some notation. So let's say that the reducible representations of rho are sort of gamma zero, and then rho zero as rho r, say for some r. Then I can form some partition function. So this is going to be the basic sort of function of interest. So my variables are going to be q0 up to qr. It's just a generating function of, Euler characteristics of these Hilbert schemes. So here I'm going to put some ni rho I, and then q to the n. So this is multi-index notation. So I sum over all possible representations. This E is just a topological Euler characteristic. Of course, I could do other things. This is always just a starting point. I could put the motive there. I could put lots of other things. So this is really sensible for D equals 2. For D equals 3, there is a kind of variant, which is the Donaldson-Thomas partition function, where I do the same thing, but I look at the virtual Euler characteristic. Which is the integral of the Behrend function, the same thing. So even that makes makes sense, but really I'm going to restrict to the Calabi-Yau cases. So we'll assume, of course, these definitions make sense, but we will assume that in fact gamma is a subgroup of SLD. So we are in the Calabi-Yau case. Everything I'm going to say is very strongly tied to the Calabi-Yau. So in the two dimensions, the symplectic, and in three dimensions, the Calabi-Yau assumption. So beyond that, one can say much less.
May I ask?
Yes.
So you say the quotient is just the coordinate ring of the scheme.
That's right. But yes.
There's always a trivial representation.
Yes.
So what is it exactly the condition?
Sorry. What?
So you say the quotient is isomorphic to rho.
The quotient of C mod I. Yes.
Yes. But it's always contains a trivial representation.
Yeah. So sometimes it's going to be empty. Yeah.
So is Rho irreducible?
I didn't make any statement about what it is. In general, it's a combination of different things. Yeah.
Particularly, it's always the trivial part should be empty.
Yeah.
Is it true that the fixed point for gamma acting on the field have several connected components,
Yeah, that's right. So if you take the union over all rho of these things, that is just the gamma fixed point of all the Hilbert schemes put together. And of course, you know the number of points is a dimension of rho. So right. And in general, this is a bad space. In some cases, it's nicer. Just in this sort of general. Wait, there's two more things to say. So gamma abelian is going to be our main example. I'll discuss some non-abelian cases, but gamma abelian is the main example. And then it really reduces to combinatorics. So then torus localization reduces the computation of Z to combinatorics. So this is true. But what I hope to convince you is that while it's true, it's not always that helpful. And also, it is always interesting to remember where, what's the geometry behind the combinatorics. So I'll specify, I'll make this much more precise later. But most of the things I'm studying here are completely explicit combinatorial problems. But as combinatorial problems, they are not. So you get new insight from treating them not just as combinatorial problems. And then just sort of the last thing to say is that for d equals 2, which I'm going to discuss in the first half of the lecture, this is sort of very well known, but I hope to tell you some relatively new things. So then there is a very strong relation to the representation theory of affine Lie algebras. So this is an essentially very well known story, but as I say, there's going to be a little bit of a twist on standard stories. I mean, going back to our paper a couple of years ago. So for d equals 3 is when this is sort of DT theory, and you would hope to use whole algebras, the koha, to sort of say something about these partition functions. As I explained, we have failed so far really to do what we were trying to do. The theory does have quite different flavors, and the connections are. There are connections between the 2D story and the 3D story, but they are not sort of obvious. And if gamma is trivial, then there are some very well-known connections between the sort of DT theory Hilbert scheme of points on C3, and then that reduces to questions about the Hilbert scheme of points on C2 and related, so the related constructions. But because of this group action, the relations are not so obvious. And the subject has sort of slightly different flavor in the two cases. Okay, so that's by way of generalities. And so let me just discuss for the next sort of 20 minutes or so the dimension 2 case. So what happens in two dimensions? And that's sort of section 2. And I start with the abelian case. So of course, this is beginning with this very well-known story. So gamma is a finite subgroup of SL2C. So there are three types, the abelian to infinite series, the abelian type A, the non-abelian type D, the dihedral case, and then the exceptional cases. And sorry, one more thing in general, just by way of notation. So there is, of course, the geometric quotient. I can take the geometric quotient, CD mod gamma. So that's a singular algebraic variety. And then it is known in these cases, so D equals 2 and D equals 3, it has minimal resolutions. So it has Y minimal Calabi-Yau resolution, sometimes more than one. And there is a distinguished one. So maybe I'll just put that there. So just to finish that, so there's a distinguished resolution Y, which is, in that notation, is the Hilbert scheme corresponding to the regular representation of CD. So of course, D is less or equal to 3 always. It's not true in general, but in that case, it's true. And that is a resolution of the quotient CD mod gamma. So this goes back to, I don't know, Ranov, maybe Ginzburg, for n equals 2, Suvasaro, Nakajima, and Ito, and Nakamura. So I guess this is D equals 2, and this is D equals 3. For D equals 2, of course, the statement is not so surprising, because the Hilbert scheme is non-singular. You're taking the fixed point locus of a finite group action on a non-singular scheme. So it is itself non-singular. And this is just the Hilbert Chow morphism restricted to this non-singular variety. So somehow there's something to check, but it's not so surprising. For D equals 3, this is very surprising. For D equals 3, of course, the original space, the Hilbert scheme of points of C3 is a very ugly space. It's in general, it's not even irreducible. It's got lots of huge components. Nevertheless, if you cut out inside the Hilbert scheme of points of C3, this regular Hilbert scheme, that turns out to be irreducible and non-singular and giving a Carpenter solution. So that result or that observation was made by Nakamura. And I guess in general, I should also put Pidgel and King Reed here. So they proved, they kind of gave a uniform proof for all groups that this is an irreducible Carpenter solution. Okay, so that why will play a role occasionally. Okay, so back to the two-dimensional abelian case. So then we have gamma is just Z mod n embedded into SL2C in the standard way. So matrices omega 0, 0, omega inverse for various nth roots of unity. And if you kind of go through the torus localization, then the good thing, of course, is that this group commutes with the diagonal group diagonal matrices, any diagonal matrix. And so you can use the C2 to commute with T equals C star squared action. So you can torus localize the computation of this Euler characteristic. And the T fixed points are in one-to-one correspondence with diagonally colored partitions. So this is a reasonably standard story. I'll just show this for n equals 2. For what's a diagonally colored partition for n equals 2 is checkerboard coloring. So you take an ordinary partition, you draw it as little boxes, and then you periodically diagonally color it, in this case with two colors. So that would be a diagonally colored partition for n equals 2. So if I have a, so P will be the set of partitions. If I have a partition, then I can associate to it a multiweight where I count the number of colored boxes of each color. So this is going to be in n to the n, and I count boxes. And of course, for any non-trivial partition, you start with that box. So that's the trivial representation in the corner. So you do that, and then torus localization tells us that in this case, my partition function is simply the generating function of colored partitions in this coloring. So this equality is just follows from T localization. And this fact. And so this is a well-known thing. So as an example, if once again back to n equals 2, the generating function of checkerboard colored partitions. So here I have two q's, q0, q1. And there's a formula that it's E of q. So I'll say what E is and what q is. E of q squared times a nice sort of Jacobi theta function k squared plus k. So this thing here is a very well-known sum, and it features in the Jacobi triple product identity. And what is E of q? E of q is just theta function product 1 minus q to the n to the minus 1 and greater or equal to 1. So that is just a generating function for partitions, ordinary partitions. So that's the formula. And how does one prove such a formula? So this relies on a very explicit combinatorial bijection. I don't know who to attribute this to, so maybe it's certainly the reference that people refer to is a book of James and Kleber on representation theory of the symmetric group. I don't know whether this is their theorem. Must go back earlier. I don't know. So this is the theorem, which is that this n coloring gives a bijection. So on the one hand, between the set of all partitions, and then on the other hand, so the explicit combinatorial bijection is with n copies of partitions. So this is n partitions for each one, and then something called Pn core, a certain set of n core partitions. I don't want to say what n core partitions are in general. But again, for n equals 2, the two core partitions are just the staircases. So this is a staircase. And then it's colored like that. So that's a staircase. And then what you see here in this formula, so this is corresponding to this part of the bijection. And then this is the generating function of staircases. That's very easy to. It's very easy to see. And so what's then the corollary for any n? So the corollary for any n is that there is a formula which expresses the partition function of n-colored partitions in the following form. So first, there is a very similar. Oh, and I didn't say what q is. I'm sorry. So here, q is the product. And so is here. So with q equals q0, qn minus 1, the partition function for all colored partitions has a factor eq to the n in front. And then there is a sum. And this is very naturally written in the following form. So sum m in zn minus 1, so sum over a lattice, q to the half inner product, so for a particular inner product on that lattice, times product qi to the mi. I goes from 1 to m minus 1. OK, so where was the inner product? So this inner product here is the type am minus 1 Cartan. So it's given by the Cartan matrix or Dinkin, yeah, the Cartan matrix of the quiver. Type an minus 1, a root system type an minus 1. OK, so as I say, this is a completely combinatorial theorem, and it has a completely combinatorial proof. But there are a few good things about it. So one is that it's a very nice thing. So if I ignore that for a moment, this is just a modular function. It's a product, well, up to some power of q. It's a product of some power of the eta function with a standard lattice theta function. So this is some kind of Jacobi Riemann type deformation of a theta function. So it has some very sort of nice modular properties, which is kind of what you expect in this story. And then the other point about this formula is that it generalizes, and I'll just come to in a minute. It generalizes to the other cases. So this is now very much a formula written in a least theoretic language. So you can just take it over. And in fact, it also works. OK, so I haven't got much else to say. So this is just a very, very standard story and used a lot in this subject. So if you go to non-abelian cases, you can just sort of generalize a lot of this. And a lot of this works in the same way, not everything. So what works and what doesn't work? So non-abelian cases, so gamma is either type Dn or E6, 7, 8. So these are the non-abelian finite subgroups of SU2 or SL2. Just the lifts of the interesting rotation subgroups in SO3. And so, basically, you can just write down the same thing. And I'm going to write this as a theorem of Nakajima, although it follows from Nakajima's work, which is just you can just copy this over with a little twist. So with the straight Q, which is some combination of the QI. So as I said, everything is defined. I've already defined everything. We have these Hilbert schemes. And so the only thing to say is that the Q is not the product of the QIs, but it's Q to the delta, where what is delta? So delta is these Dynkin indices, which I can just record as the vector of, for example, the dimensions of the reducible representations. We have a very similar formula. Basically, I can just copy this formula. So the partition function z of q is e of q to the r plus 1. So r is the rank. R plus 1 is the number of representations. Times sum over the root lattice of the corresponding Lie algebra. Lambda r, q to the half, mm. So this is a lattice. It's got its natural inner product. And then I expand on the basis of simple roots. So there's a formula like that. So this somehow, in terms of root systems, these are the finite roots. So this product runs over just a finite root lattice, and then just the finite q's corresponding to the finite roots, and then q takes care of the last one, of the affine root. So the reason why this is so, the proof is just that that these Hilbros are certain Nakajima quiver varieties. So all these Hilbro can be described as Nakajima quiver varieties on the corresponding affine quiver, so on the affine quiver, corresponding to gamma under the Mackay correspondence, so corresponding to the same type. So even that's not new at all. So this you can just write these things down. The reason I wrote this all these things down is for really just to say the last thing, and that board I shouldn't be using probably. So I go back to there, which is really what our work was with Yanga and Nemati, which is you can specialize these in a nice way, and you get something which is certainly new. So the C is going to the singular Hilbert scheme. So what was new in our work in two dimensions is you can take these formulae, and you can compute something that was not known, namely the following. So there's an interesting specialization of this. So suppose I want to compute the following expression. So remember, x is C2 mod gamma. For now, gamma is arbitrary. So this is a singular surface. I don't want to resolve it. It has its own Hilbert schemes of points. Now, there's something special that's happening here, which is that these Hilbert schemes, so these are Hilbert schemes of singular varieties. Well, they are defined. They represent a functor. But not only that, but they are, in this case, actually known to be irreducible. So there's a little theorem here. Well, it's not a little. It's a theorem. And I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the author. I'm sorry. It'll come back. Theorem says that these are all reducible. In fact, the conjecture is that this is the only case where all Hilbert schemes of a singular variety are reducible in dimensions greater than one when it's an AD surface singularity. So this is actually supposed to be quite special to that case. So in any case, we're still looking at reasonably natural varieties. They're reducible varieties. This space still has the property that the only clusters it has, well, all the clusters it has, can be deformed to smooth clusters. So if you that's basically what this says, is that every singular cluster, every sort of set of points, scheme theoretic set of points concentrated at the singularity, can be nicely smoothened out to a bunch of points inside the space. So then here is the theorem reproved. So this is with Yang and Nemeti. And there's a theorem part and the conjecture part. So first I write down the formula and I say, when is it a theorem, when is it a conjecture? So suppose I want to compute this very natural quantity, 0 q to the n. So just the generating function of the Euler characteristics of Hilbert schemes of points of the surface, of the singular surface. And then the answer is that you take the corresponding z, the equivariant one. So I put the gamma there just to indicate that I'm talking about this function, the equivariant function, the multivariable function. And I substitute. So I already told you what the q is. So q is q to the delta, just as before. And then what I need to substitute is I substitute the finite q's, q0 up to qr, to be the exponential of 2 pi I over 1 plus Joule Coxeterna. 1 plus the Joule Coxeter number. Actually, I could write Coxeter number also, because it's the same thing. So this is, I think, surprising. So this is a theorem for type A. So in type A, this is, again, a purely combinatorial statement. And for type D, which where it's not a purely combinatorial statement, it's a conjecture for type E. And the reason why we can't say anything about type E at this point is that our approach is still very combinatorial. And in type E, we just can't do it. But in type D, it works well, and we can prove this result. So one thing about this is that, OK, so now we have kind of substituted some roots of unity into sort of some part of this. So the Q would stay, but these linear terms would go away. Or in this language, you just have the quadratic part with some root of unity substitutions on that part. So this in particular shows that this is shows modularity of this expression. So one corollary is that this is modular, which is very much expected from S-duality, but I don't think it was not known in this case. And it's quite an intriguing substitution from the point of view of representation theory. I don't have time to go into that. And in fact, I can't say very much. But there's some ideas on how this relates to representation theory, and it looks quite interesting.
Of the
affine Lie algebra. So everything here, I should say already, that formula, that has, of course, a categorification. I could write cohomology instead of Euler characteristic. And then the right-hand side is just the character of the basic representation of the affine Lie algebra. There's no automorphism, just a Dynkin diagram. Take the AD Dynkin diagram, take the corresponding affine Lie algebra, and that's it. Yeah. So this substitution seems to have some kind of interesting representation theoretic meaning, but I can't say.
Q must just the product of the QI, so you
Yes, or more generally, it's some power. So for type D, it would be something like Q0, Q1, Q2 squared, Q3 squared.
How do I have to read this formula? You don't view Q as the product of all Qi?
I do. So I can do this. I mean, if you want, I would have to say, and Q0 is Q times whatever it is.
Also Q0.
Yeah. There's a Q0, and then, yes. So the Q0 is always special, and that always corresponds to the trivial representation. I wish I wanted. So that, yeah, Q0 is always special. That corresponds to the trivial representation. Q0 stays in this form. So I kind of substitute away the finite ones, but this product, or more generally, this thing works. But it's invertible as far as Q2 Q0 is concerned. So that's fine.
Sorry, but it's also a fewer description of these inverse schemes?
That's a very interesting question. So conjecturally, yes.
And they are, again, a Nakajima queer varieties?
They should be Nakajima queer varieties for special stability conditions, yes. But don't go away and prove it. My student is trying to prove that.
So it's a stability condition that lives in a wall?
That's right. That's the conjecture. Yeah. Right, so there's a very recent paper on the birational geometry of these spaces due to Ali Crowe and Craig Bellamy. And they study the birational geometry of the non-singular things. It's a very nice paper. And there's a very clear indication where that Hilbert scheme should live. So we're trying to prove that. Right, so that's, I guess, all I wanted to say about surfaces. Yeah, type D is sort of special in this story, and I won't say much about it. But type D is sort of in between the abelian case, which is fully combinatorial, and presumably type E, which we can't do, which is more geometric. So type D, there's an interesting mixture of combinatorics and geometry that goes into our proof. And it can't be fully combinatorial because you lose one of the C stars, of course, as always. So type D is always harder because you don't have a full torus symmetry. But we can salvage enough to reduce the problem in type D to some quite hard combinatorics and geometry. The combinatorics itself is not that hard, but somehow to match it with the geometry, it turns out to be surprisingly involved, at least the way we do it. OK. Right, so maybe just move to, I've been reluctant to move to D equals 3 because I'd like to be able to say more, but let's move over to D equals 3 and just see what we can do or what people can do. And we'll see some of the themes from Kevin Costello's talk come up here in kind of explicit ways. So D equals 3. What's the story here? So I will only discuss the abelian case here. There's a little bit to say about the non-abelian cases, but it's not that different from the abelian cases. Things that can be said, I should say. So I'm assuming gamma abelian. In fact, just for notational simplicity, most of the time I'm going to assume gamma is cyclic. But of course, that's not enough data in this dimension. So I have to say, I have to give the weights. So what are the weights? A, B, C. So when I say weights, I mean just what power I should raise some root of unity. So there's different embeddings, of course, of Z mod n into SL3C, mostly. But that really is just for notational convenience. And I'll mention a couple of non-cyclic cases because they are interesting. What I'm also going to do, I'm going to ignore, and that's, although it will seem that it's a bad thing to do, it's actually OK. That's OK. That's not the problem. Ignore sort of what is colloquially known in the trade as DT sign. So I'm just going to ignore all issues of Behrend function. But I say that's OK. That can be controlled. That's not a problem. So I'm just going to pretend that the signs don't exist. So okay, so what is this partition function? So I'm just going to sort of remember my embedding just in the notation. And once again, the sort of starting point is reducing it to combinatorics is very similar. It is just, so once again, we are back to an abelian case. So we have a T equals C star cube symmetry, well, if you know DT business, then you might worry that we really want T0 equals C star square, the Calabi-Yau torus in there. That came up earlier this week. But that's OK. So you can use either torus here to localize. If you just localize the Euler characteristic, you can use the full one. But the upshot is that it's still a combinatorial sum. It's very similar to what I wrote before. Now this alpha, I'm going to just denote this by Q. So this Q is the set of plane partitions. So this is the set of plane partitions. And when I write this weight, then I'm going to use the n coloring. And instead of giving you a formal definition, so n is the number of colors, is the number of group elements. And you have to use the weight, so really n coloring by ABC. And instead of giving you a general definition, I'll just show you examples. But there's a very obvious way in which the lattice, which is, if you want, the T-character lattice or the lattice of monomials in C3, gets colored by n colors using this weighting. And so what's a plane partition? So I'll just draw you kind of one picture. Can I draw you one picture? Try and draw you one picture. So it's just an arrangement of boxes, much as partitions are an arrangement of squares. OK, so what you should see here is an arrangement of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 little 3D boxes in a corner. So there are some axes here, the x-axis, y-axis, z-axis, a positive octant. And I have a set of boxes sitting in there. And so say I want to color this with z mod 3 embedded with weights 0, 1, minus 1. So what does that mean? So that means that I'm going to, maybe let's put 0, minus 1, 1. So that's the vertical coordinate. So that means that I'm going to color my little boxes with three different colors. So that is there's a red layer, and then, say, a black layer and a white layer. And it's all going to be very periodic as dictated by these numbers. So this next one is 1, 2, 3, 1. So this is white. And this is going to be red. So this sort of little 3D arrangement has multi-weight. I need to color the different boxes. So it has, say, if this is the x-coordinate, this is the y-coordinate, this is z-coordinate, then it has two white ones, three red ones, that's the last one, and one black one. So that's the multi-weight attached to the three-dimensional partition. So that particular thing will contribute to this sum with the character q0 squared, q1, q3, q2, q. So here, q is q0 up to qi minus 1, as before. So now the only difference is I'm running over these alphas due to the alpha. Same formula. So the question is, what can one say about this in these cases? And so we have been playing for a long, long time with this conjecture. And it is just a conjecture. And I'll explain where it comes from. And I'll explain why I think it's sort of moderate interest. So the conjecture is that at least some part of this, this should be true. So recall, this is the abelian two-dimensional formula. And some part of this should be true. So what part should be true? So at the very least, the following thing should be true. If I take this partition function, so with q equals q0, qm minus 1, once again, the product, there should be a formula which goes m of q to the n, and then some z reduced gamma of q with two things. So with m of q is the MacMahon, being a MacMahon function, which is just the generating function of partitions without any colors, plane partitions. And the main thing, of course, without anything further, this would be an empty statement, but we conjecture that this reused partition function has non-negative coefficient. So that's the content of the conjecture. So why do we expect a factorization like that, and what should that mean? Thank you. So this comes from some different sources. So one thing to notice is that this Q, this is really the character of the regular representation. So what this should somehow vaguely correspond to is sort of copies of the regular representation. We expect somehow copies of the regular representation to come out. More specifically, this M of Q, so this, maybe I'll make a, write this down. So, so remarks. So the main remark is, so what is this N? So well, N is the size of the group, which is the number of conjugacy classes of the group, because the group is abelian. And then this is what was called, I guess, the physicist's island number conjecture. In the 90s, when I was a PhD student, Miles Reed went around telling everybody that this is called the physicist's island number conjecture. And then he remarks later that he was at some point told that they have names. So due to Waffa and that the Euler characteristic of the resolution, as the physicist said, or any resolution, as the mathematician would say, is the number of conjugacy classes in the SL case. So what this thing here is really this factor, M of Q to the N, is just M of Q to the Euler characteristic of Y. This is just the DT0 partition function of Y, again, without the signs. So just the generating function of points, Hilbert schemes of points of the minimal resolution. So then this, in that sense, is sort of analogous to some, in some vague sense, to some kind of DTPT-like formula, if you know this formulae, where you express some DT series as a product of some power of the McMahon function, and the power is geometrically motivated, times some reduced function with some reasonable properties. So because we are essentially working in combinatorics, then the reasonable properties seem to be at the first approximation that it's a non-negative series. So I'll say something more specific in specific cases, but this is the strongest conjecture we are able to make in this generality, and even this we can't prove. So I should say, what's the evidence? So the first set of evidence is some cases that I'm going to explain where this conjecture is known, and that will relate to Kevin's talk from yesterday. And the other bit of evidence is just a lot of computer calculations. So of course, this is perfectly programmable to any finite degree. And we just checked it for a whole bunch of groups for relatively high, you know, for millions of configurations. This is true. Of course, that's just evidence. There's no proof. The one other thing I should say, which is more specific to this. So this in particular says something. So for this to be true, it already tells you one sort of non-trivial thing. There is a coefficient here where that it sort of says something non-trivial about. And so this can only be true. Be true if, well, I'm going to repeat the same discussion, but so if the Euler characteristic of the Hilbert scheme of regular orbits of C3 is at least n, because that appears as a coefficient here and also appears as a coefficient there, and you just check that the positivity says that. Now, in fact, that's known to be equal to n. In fact, as per the previous remark, there's equality here. That's precisely n. But that's a combinatorial statement, and I don't know a combinatorial proof of that statement. So that says something about how many ways are there to color, how many configurations are there with one color each. I'm sure it has an elementary proof. I haven't thought very hard. But it's not sort of obvious from this point of view that no matter what your coloring is, as long as it's an SL coloring, as long as it's a trivial determinant coloring, then there's exactly n such configurations, independent of the details of the coloring. So this is a kind of my mini example in which kind of geometry strikes back and tells you something relatively trivial about some combinatorial question. So let me just close by explaining some examples where this is known, and in fact much more is known. So known cases. And so the first one is an example that featured also in Kevin's talk. So let's take gamma to be Z mod N. So basically the same thing that I wrote there, 1 minus 1, 0. So, so the geometry here is that X, which is C3 mod gamma, is really isomorphic to C2 mod the same gamma cross C. So this is just a fiber geometry with its standard minimal resolution that featured in Kevin's talk. And so here is a theorem. And I'm going to write a theorem using exponential notation, a platistic exponential. So I don't want to go into the details of the platistic exponential. If you know, you know. If you don't, then you won't learn it from a 3-minute introduction. But there's a kind of nice way to write infinite products as infinite sums. And this is very closely related to categorification, because essentially what you're saying is that you're writing some underlying vector space as the symmetric space, symmetric powers of some kind of more basic underlying object, which is the sort of algebra of the space of BPS states in your story. So in that exponential notation, this formula would, for example, become, I'm just going to write capital X, Q over 1 minus Q squared. So this is already somewhat compacted from the natural thing. The natural thing would be some kind of sum with some BPS numbers in it. But in these cases, you can actually write it in an even more compact form with these exponentiated rational functions. So let me use that notation and just to explain the features of the formula without detail. So in this case, this function was computed by Ben Young, and this is not a difficult result. So if you take Okonkov-Reshetykin's proof of this sort of modern Fock space proof of this statement, how do you get the MacMahon function out of Fock space ideas? And you just put in some weights, then you get this result. So this is not a hard result, but the formula is very beautiful. So Z of Q is this exponential of, you have this Q over 1 minus Q squared times R, what is R? N. N or N minus 1, sorry. N. Plus the sum Q to the alpha. Alpha runs over just the roots of what? So let me just make some comments on this. So this is just the root lattice, once again, of an minus 1, the finite Dynkin diagram an minus 1. This part of the formula, exponential certainly satisfies the rule that it's a kind of product. So this part of the formula is our conjecture. So this is this MacMahon function q to the n that we expect to factorize. And then the rest of the formula is the reduced function. And it's very nice, because on the other hand, this whole thing is the character of the adjoint representation of SLM minus 1. So this is, of course, directly related to Kevin's talk. You just see the finite Lie algebra SLM minus 1 appearing here, which is, of course, the symmetry that physicists and everybody else expects for this story. But this is essentially the same computation as what Kevin was explaining to you. And I guess the rest of this stuff is somehow the other things that he had there, which is these other things. But you just see that appearing very natural. Now, there's another case which is a bit more enigmatic, also due to Ben Young. Which which is not an abelian case. So that's this is the only thing that's actually known. So the next case, or sort of the last case, really, where you take gamma equals Z2 cross Z2. So this is going a bit beyond what Kevin was. I think it goes a bit beyond the examples that he had. There's only one embedding of this into SL3. This is the diagonal order two matrices of determinant one. So of course the coloring extends to abelian non-cyclic cases. You can just imagine how each of these representations would correspond to some character of this group. So the whole story extends. So what is the theorem? This is again Ben Young, and this is a much harder result. He proves it using wall crossing, actually. So this is the statement is purely combinatorial. He doesn't have a combinatorial proof. He only has a wall crossing proof, actually wall crossing to the conifold. So he uses earlier known his own results on the combinatorial side of conifold partition functions, and he can sort of wall cross to that. It's a very, very pretty but rather involved argument. And so what's the answer? So you take the partition function for this gamma. There's, let me just write this explicitly, that's sort of four Qs. So what's the answer? It's an exponential of, OK, so it's sort of beginning to be, looks like the same kind of thing, Q over 1 minus Q squared. So once again, Q is the product of the QIs. It's an abelian situation. So this is what the formula looks like. There's a 2 plus product I equals 1 to 3, QI to the half minus QI minus half. And then there's an intriguing term, so times Q1 to the minus half, Q2 to the minus half, Q3 to the minus half, minus Q1 to the half, Q2 to the half, Q3 to the half. Maybe that's too many brackets. OK, so what's the interpretation here? So first of all, although it's not so obvious, but if you rewrite this, then it does have. So this is 4 plus other stuff. So you see, so that 4 corresponds to the MacMahon function mq to the 4 that we expected. So that's there. And then the rest is somehow has a kind of Lie theoretic flavor. So this thing here is an SL2. There's three copies of SL2 symmetry here, which is what the physicists would say is the natural symmetry of this configuration. It's an SL2 cross SL2 cross SL2, or SU2 cross SU2 cross SU2 thing.
Can you draw the product diagram for this?
Yeah, sure, with pleasure. So it's a bit outside the thing that you had.
Yes.
This is very intriguing, because if you somehow introduce some kind of fourth dummy variable, then you could sort of delete that, put a 4 here, and then with Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 equals 1. That's just a kind of numerical trick. I don't know what that means. Then it would be more symmetric. But I don't know. I don't know what this corresponds to here. So that's the question there in kind of, you know, for whole algebra people. Can you compute something about the whole algebra here? Can you compute something? Can you compute it? I mean, it's a bit beyond the models that.
It's a compact two-cycle, right?
Yeah. No. It doesn't have a compact two-cycle. So this only has. Sorry, then I may be wrong. I'm sorry. Did I write the wrong thing? Okay. So that.
Was supposed to.
I drew the right thing. It doesn't have a compact two-cycle. So the two cycles are here, here, and here. So none of them is compact. So this is why it's computable. It does not have a compact.
It's supposed to draw something with double lines.
So maybe I drew the wrong. Sorry, that's the wrong thing. I'm sorry. Whatever it is. Sorry. It was the wrong thing. I'm sorry.
I see. It's the initially the exceptional supergroup.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
There's like an exceptional supergroup.
I'm sorry. SL2.
Yes.
And then, yeah. I'm sorry. That was the wrong thing. That was the next one. So this is only computable. The only things are computable here are without two cycles. So you will not. So the next one is the one that I drew.
You happen to know the thing for Z3 and Z3.
Say again?
So this is a generalization where you have n leg.
Yeah, I'm coming to that. Yeah. I don't know anything, but I'm coming to the next one in a second. So before I do that, let me go to the one that I drew, which is, okay, so here the conjecture is still true, and there's a full computation of the function, not, you know, this is old. This is now over 10 years old. So the next question that we want to study, and really that's the one that we were hoping to study in some detail, is that three with weights 1, 1, 1, which is the one I drew, which is this one, or the dual diagram is that one. So this does have a compact 2-cycle. So this is the resolution. So the y here is just the total space of the anticanonical. So this is, of course, a very well-studied geometry. And this is very, very tried. And you can indeed kind of categorify this into the whole algebra and try and prove the identity there. And there's some intriguing things you can do and some nice positivity that, well, we can prove that Bent's purity techniques prove for us. But we just couldn't get to the full answer. We just couldn't get this factorization in any reasonable way, because the any reasonable whole algebra interpretation that we could give to this term had no manifest positivity properties at all. And of course, once you decategorify and come back to a formula which doesn't have positivity, then you haven't proved anything, because of course, you know, this function divides that with some integer of coefficient. So that's not interesting at all. So this is where we were trying to use whole algebra techniques. What you can do is you can sort of refine the left-hand side. You can give a kind of quantization of it using the standard techniques of putting in the Lefschetz motive, and you can prove some positivity there. But the main thing that we were trying to prove, we just couldn't get anywhere near. And then the other thing we checked in this case is that this is not really the other sort of negative answer, is that this is not a counting function, at least not a counting function that respects the problem, the symmetries of the problem. So you work out some coefficients of this, and you can just see that there's no way this could be counting some sort of set of configurations analogous to the two-dimensional case. So in the two-dimensional case, this itself had a nice combinatorial interpretation. And it was suspected that Ben Young already sort of thought about that, whether this could have combinatorial interpretation in his cases, and it wasn't obvious. But in our case, we can actually show that there is no interpretation that respects all the symmetries of the problem, because the coefficients are just wrong.
Is it because of the compact case?
Sorry?
Is it because of the compact case?
Well, it's harder because of the compact case, yes. Basically because wall crossing becomes much more complicated, as everybody knows. So then finally, let me come to the question where, I mean, we can't say anything at all. I ran my computer for a while to see if something interesting pops up, is the generalization of this. Just for concreteness, let's go to Z3 cross Z3 inside SL3. Basically, we can't say anything, but it is a very interesting model. So the reason why this model is very interesting, it has a similar picture to the one I now deleted. So the toric diagram looks like this. And at least the Krepend resolution corresponding to the G-Hilbert scheme looks like this. And then, so the dual Webb diagram is going to look like this nice kind of honeycomb picture. So in physics, this is a model of great interest, because the physics, so there is sort of SL3 cross SL3 cross SL3 symmetry. But it's expected that actually, because of this node in the middle, that actually combines to an E6 symmetry. And there are some really nice computations in a different manifestation of this model where that E6 can be made reasonably explicit. I played with the function a little bit. But while our conjecture seems to hold, I mean, it's very hard to get numerical results if your group gets big, because the few things you can check are basically trivial beyond the case I already explained, which is like the which is this case, which we know anyway to be true. I can't get anything looking like E6 out of this calculation. So, I mean, I don't know what's the story there. We would have loved to see something like E6 there, or even SL3 cross SL3 plus SL3. But the expectation is that beyond this factorization, this function itself doesn't have clear structural properties. It must have some, you know, eventually, hopefully, these stories kind of join up, but not unfortunately in our work. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you. So that's the super. That's the,
yeah,
Crustal. Right. So these are not. It's a very similar framework, but of course these are not Nekrasov functions. I'm not computing this symplectic volume. This is this Euler characteristic, which is slightly different. But of course, you know, structurally the formulae look a bit similar because, you know, there's the same fixed point. I mean, you know, there's some obvious formal features which are similar. But I don't know of a direct link between this and Nekrasov functions. It seems a bit different. So, I mean, as I say, for two dimensions, it's all controlled, at least the non-singular part is all controlled by the representation of the affine Lie algebra, and that's all somehow known, and it's all Nakajima Hilbert schemes, Nakajima queer varieties. So that's, yeah. So I don't know a direct link to Nekrasov function.
Yeah. I imagine you can probably do all toric Clavier threefolds without compact two cycles, is that right?
Yes, I think that's right. So that was some stuff that I think Kantaro Nagara's last papers was about that. And the formulae look sort of similar. They are So I think there's some kind of root system and some kind of generalized root system, and the formulae look very similar.
So the problems arise when you have this compact phases like for four cycles.
Yeah, that's right. In which case, the two-dimensional case or the three-dimensional?
Two-dimensional. Can you interpolate between different values of the
curve? Yes. So in some sense, So for example, there is a very nice formula in three dimensions where you use infinitely many, where you use one color for each. So this formula are all specializations of a master formula, which has a different color for every parallel layer. So even that has a nice infinite product form. And this is just a specialization of that. So yes, and for the kind of one that's basically surface cross something like cross C, then for those cases, there's a kind of uniform. Yeah, these are all specializations of the same uniform formula. Well, the problem starts when you start mixing the colors in the layers. Right. There's some. Yeah. Let's leave it at that. Sorry, I'm mumbling.